Well, thank you, Daryl. This has been an exciting process creating this document. I was one of many people. I was one of the first to get involved with this, and that's part of the reason why I'm here giving this presentation. But many people were involved in creating it. And one person that Daryl didn't mention who's here is Neil Martin. Hi, Neil. Neil had a lot to do with helping us set up some of the test programs that we did for some of the captures. Dan Levenger also was a key contributor, and there were several other contributors. There were several other contributors who are not present at this instant, but who might join us. So what I'm going to do today is give you an overview of this document. This is a 150-page document. It's meant to describe the file services system holistically and to try to do some integration among the many different protocol documents that are involved in the file services system. So the the problem that we're trying to solve here is that the individual protocol technical documents describe the protocols in great detail, but by themselves they don't really provide a holistic picture of how Windows uses the protocols for some particular purpose. And so there's a family of system documents that's being created, and this is one of them. And these system documents basically take a higher level view. And the very difficult task is to describe how the system works while making reference to the protocol documents, but repeating as little as possible the information that's in the protocol documents. So we were struggling to write this document to keep the discussion fairly high level, but also to make it complete, which tends to drive you towards details. So I hope you'll judge that we found the right balance between that. So what we needed to provide beyond what's written in the protocol documents themselves is information about how the protocols are used in combination with each other to accomplish a specific purpose, in this case, file services. Information about how the sequences of interactions between the several components comprising the system, how they work, you know, how do the components communicate with each other to implement file services. And then also information about how the system interacts with external components, for example, directory services, and how the system behaves when those components are not available. The file services system functions differently depending on the environment that it lives in, and it really doesn't have any external dependencies that are hard dependencies, but it makes use of external components to enhance and change its behavior. So goals for the system are to document the member protocols and how they work together to implement file access services. And so which are the member protocols? They are detailed here. These are the protocols that we deem to be the primary protocols that are used in implementing the file access services system. Obviously, the SMB protocols, those are the ones that first come to mind. They are SIFS and SMB and SMB2. And a protocol that's known as FSCC, which is really not a protocol in its own right, but an elaboration of both SMB and SMB2. It was structured that way because there were common elements between SMB and SMB2, and we wanted to factor them out into a common document rather than to repeat that information in both of the SMB and SMB2 documents. Then there's the DFS referral protocol, which is used to do the namespace virtualization for the distributed file system. There are the NFS protocols, which I'm not going to cover in detail in this presentation, but we do cover them in considerable detail in the document as to how NFS integrates with SMB in the Windows implementations. And finally, there's a set of administrative protocols, the RAP, the remote administration protocol, the workstation service remote protocol, the server service remote protocol, distributed file system namespace management protocol, which is the companion protocol to DFSC, and FSRM, the file system and file services remote management protocol. So these are the member protocols that are discussed in some detail in the document. So how do we address this? Well, we're following a template that was prescribed for us And all of the system documents follow this template. The after some introductory matter, it dives into some, in section three, it dives into some use cases, which kind of set up the rest of the document by describing how the system is used from a fairly distant perspective, an external perspective. And then it goes into block diagrams, and the block diagrams elucidate the components that comprise the system and how they're connected together by protocols, and you know, which protocols are used from one component to another component. Then there's a data model that talks about shared state between protocols. Shared state arises primarily when a management protocol changes some state variable that affects the behavior of a data protocol. So there's a bit of interaction between protocols that's documented in this data model. There's some layering diagrams that discuss transport relationships primarily. And then a great deal of document is devoted to sequence diagrams, which, by the way, we did the network trace capture with NetMon 3.3 during its beta phase. So that was exciting. We found it to be quite a useful tool. We have quite a few pages of detailed sequence diagrams in the document. However, I should say that they are, as detailed as they are, they're slightly more abstract than the actual traces that you would find with NetMon. And we are planning to post, I'm not sure they're posted yet, do you know, Daryl? The actual reference traces on CodePlex.
I don't think they're posted in this doc yet.
Yeah. So hopefully by being not quite as detailed as NetMon, it's actually slightly more useful in this sort of continual progression from, you know, fairly high-level description down to the real bits and bytes that you can get with the NetMon trace. So as I said in my introduction, the purpose of the document is to complement but not to duplicate the technical documents, and therefore it's sort of an implementer's guide or an application note, if you will, for use of the protocol technical documents themselves. Here's a table of contents for the template that we were following when we created this document, and I've underlined the sections that I think are the most significant in the document, and which I'm going to provide a little more detail about in the rest of this talk. So you can see it starts with an introduction and then an overview which lists the member protocols, which I've already shown you. And then it goes into some background foundational information, finishing with a discussion of the use cases, which I'm going to describe a little bit more in a moment. Then there's a chapter on system context, where the most important part about it, that one, I think, is the system relationships, where we introduce the block diagram, the black box block diagram. Then it starts getting really interesting for system architects in this section here. And there's a diagram here in section 5.4, which is actually where we started the document. It's a white box model of the internal architecture of the FSSO. And when we were coming to grips with this task of writing this document, we actually went right here first and created this as a reference diagram to guide the rest of our work. Then it goes into these system details where we discuss details of time of sequence diagrams. And there's a little bit on security, and then an appendix to do with Windows behavioral notes. So if you're familiar with the technical documents, you'll recognize some of the same kinds of information here. But it's quite a bit at a higher level. So here's an example of a use case diagram. This is from section 3. The use cases describe some typical operations, certainly not every operation that's possible with the file services system, but ones that we chose that we thought would be exemplary, good examples of how the system works. And they're collected together in four summary use cases. And this diagram documents one of those. Okay, so this particular summary use case runs through a sequence of operations. It's called find, file, and work group. And it simulates somebody who, it's kind of a made-up case, but somebody who doesn't really know where to look for a file. And so he starts by browsing the network for file servers, and then he finds a file server that's the likely candidate that contains this file, and he browses the file server, and he homes in on the file itself and opens the file. So that's this summary use case that we constructed, somewhat synthetically, to be illustrative of how the system works. And so it boils down to these sub-use cases called list computers. That's the, list the computers or browse the computers in the work group to find computers that might be file servers, right? And then the user selects one of them and lists the shares that are on that file server. And then he selects one of those and opens its root directory and lists its files. And then he opens one of the files. By the way, this is incorrect, a bug that I didn't catch. We renamed this use case late in the game to open file SMB. So please ignore this or relabel it SMB in your mind. And then he performs a file operation SMB where he opens the file. All of these activities are driven by this application that's represented here by this actor. And then there are a few supporting actors. There's the browser service, which is used to list the computers in the work group. The authentication system, which is necessary for authenticating the client when he wants to list the shares, and also when he wants to open the file. And then notice the role of what we call the object store here in this reference to FSBO. FSBO, the way we treat the actual file system is as an entity that's external to the file services system. And the reason for that is because the file services system actually can work with multiple different file systems. So we wanted to treat that as a supporting actor, a modular element in the system. Normally, this is NTFS. And the specific behavior of Windows file systems is described in this FSBO document that Daryl mentioned just a few minutes ago, actually. So here's a list of the summary use cases. The one we've just been discussing was this one, find file and work group. We have a similar one called find file and domain. The scenario is slightly different. In this case, it's a scenario where there's a domain controller present, and the process used for finding the file is slightly different. The first one that's listed there is called configure file service, and that one was constructed to essentially to show off the administration tools. So it has to do with setting up a file server, setting up shares on the file server, that sort of thing. And then the last one, communicate through shared file, that was set up to show how NFS and SMB relate to each other and how a single file can be exposed by both of those protocols. Okay, so those are the summary use cases, and they actually invoke these detail use cases that are listed here. And I've grouped them here according to who is the primary actor. So this first group where admin tool is the primary actor, these are the administrative use cases, the ones that we think are more like management oriented. So create share SMB, creating an SMB share, configure share directory, configure DFS, standalone namespace, configure DFS domain namespace, and create DFS link. So the processes of for doing these actions are described in these use cases at a fairly high level. And then when you get into the sequence diagrams later, you can see the analogous sequences of protocol operations for doing these operations. And then when the application is the primary actor, is the direct actor rather, these are the more data access oriented use cases. So you have list computers, list shares, SMB, list files, list shares, NFS, which is a similar use case for NFS operations. And you can see there are other ones. Finally, open file SMB is the one that actually does the file open. perform file operation SMB is kind of a synthesis of anything you can do once you have a file handle. so we basically group together file read, file write, delete, close, all those into one use case called perform file operation, because they're all very similar. And then there's one called act on directory change notification, which has to do with using the USN journal to see an event. Okay, now this is getting to be an eye test. How's it look in the back of the room? Okay, I'm not going to actually read all the words on this slide, but I'm going to put my glasses on now so I can see what's going on here. Okay, so this is the OpenFile SMB use case. It's done by the application. There's a bunch of front matter in the use case description, which I've listed here, but I haven't provided the details. I mean, this use case description in the document goes on for like 4 or 5 pages in the document, right? So there's a diagram, there's a goal statement, there's a context of use, there's an identification of who the direct and the primary actors are and who the supporting actors are and who the stakeholders are. It's all very formal. There's a minimal guarantee, a success guarantee. The difference there is the minimal guarantee is the thing that's going to happen no matter what. That's the least you can expect out of the use case, whereas the success guarantee is if everything goes right, what the outcome is expected to be. The main success scenario describes the steps leading to the success guarantee. And then extensions to the use case generally will describe to some degree that we were able to do it, error cases or other variations that would be different from the main success scenario. So here I've reproduced the description of the main success scenario for this use case, just so you can get sort of an idea of how pretty high level it is. And so this is to really just introduce you to what happens. So the main success scenario says application establishes a communication channel to the SMB file service. Okay, we don't tell you yet how that's going to happen, but it is described later in the document. The SMB file service authenticates the user through the mechanisms of AUTHSO, and then depending on the protocol being used, the application directs the file client to send one of the following requests, and they're listed there by protocol. The SMB file service authorizes the user, and the SMB file service performs the create operation and returns a file handle to the application. So at one level, I think this is probably all pretty obvious to the people in this room. But I think there's some interesting pieces of information in here, like, for example, the need to authorize the user is brought up in step 4 with references to how that's done in the SMB document. So that's shown here. So we have a reference to the SMB 2 and the particular section of SMB 2 that describes how that's done. So that's use cases. Then in section 4.3.1, we introduced this black box relationship diagram. And this is meant to be still very abstract, but to give you kind of an idea of the components involved in the system. It's not quite a black box. This part here that looks gray, that's the black box, which is sort of gray, actually. but it's identifying the file services system as a big player here and giving you just a tiny bit of detail of what's inside of it. And what's inside of it are the file client and the admin client as clients of the file server, and then the file service itself. And there's an indication here that we partitioned the thing that you would normally think of as a file server into the file service, which is the software that does the file server thing, and the object store, which is this typically the file system that's actually external to FSSO. So, and then there's an indication of the environment that the file access services system lives in and all of the dependencies that it has on other services or other services which have dependencies on the file services system. Now, as I mentioned earlier, these dependencies are not hard dependencies. So, for example, the file services system, as of Windows 7, can make use of a service that's known as hosted cache. That's for speeding up access to files over wide area networks. That's a new feature in Windows 7. It's certainly an optional feature. The File Access Services system works fine without access to a hosted cache. And most of these dependencies are of that nature. If you don't have access to the browser service, well, you can't browse your network, but the rest of the File Access Services system will work. The print services system is dependent on the file services system. And that's it. All of the, and this is FYI, all of the information about printing and how printing uses SMB is all covered by this document, by PSSO, and not by FSSO. So that's something to bear in mind. If you're implementing a print and file server, you need to make reference to PSSO as well as FSSO. They're designed to be complementary. Let's see, what else? Group policy also has a dependency on FSSO because group policy is actually downloaded to a client workstation by using file access services. Okay. Then in section 5.1, we discussed the abstract data model. And there's a lot of pages in the document devoted to diagrams that look like this and descriptions of the state elements that are contained in those diagrams. So let me just point out briefly how one reads these diagrams. So here we have a group of shared state, okay, that consists of these elements called connection list, session list, transport list, and file list. And what this shows is that this is state that is shared between the SMB file service, the SMB protocols, and the server service. Okay. And so the server service can actually come in and read these state elements, but in some cases it can actually change these state elements. And so that would affect the behavior of the SMB protocols. This type of relationship between the protocols is one of the unique things about the FSSO document that we were chartered and to describe and decided to describe in great detail. And I hope it will help demystify some of the more complex interactions in the systems. You can see, for example, also here the remote access protocol, can access these this state information, some of which is shared with SMB, some of which is shared with browse. Okay, so I'm not going to go into any more detail about this, but I do invite you to peruse the document. I think you'll find the figures are illustrative, but that the real the real useful information is in the text, because it does identify the state elements specifically in the text. The other thing to bear in mind, of course, is if you're constructing your own file server, we've described here how Windows does this. We haven't described how Linux would do it or how you might do it. And so there's a lot of room for your own interpretation. And we're simply describing how Windows does all these things as guidance for people who are trying to build compatible devices. In section 5.2, we discuss protocol layering. And the primary relationship that's diagrammed here is not labeled on this diagram. It is, for example, SMB2 is transported by NetBIOS over TCP. Okay, so that's what these arrows mean. Okay, and I would point out that SMB2 is the principal SMB protocol in use in Windows today. It actually prefers to run directly over TCP, but it will run over NetBIOS over TCP. And the document actually describes the rather interesting process that SMB2 uses for deciding which protocol it will run over. It also points out that SMB, the prior version, you know, ran over all these other transports, specifically NetBIOS over IPX and NetBUI. And I think it's important to know that SMB2 does not run over those transports. SMB2 is limited to NetBIOS over TCP and to TCP. Another thing that's interesting about this diagram is that MS-RAP is a very old protocol and has very limited use in the file access services today. In fact, it's used only for one purpose. There's a remote API called NetServer Enum2 and NetServer Enum3 that's transported by RAP. And that's the only current use of RAP. The NetServer Enum protocol is used in API is used in talking to the browser service to get a list of computers that the browser service has found on the network. And that's all that RAP is used for. And RAP is interesting here because RAP is a management protocol, but it's actually transported by SMB. And with the exception of RAP, everything that's going on this chart is all about data access. And so I just wanted to point out that DFSC is about getting access to files. FSCC and SMB are the file access protocols. RAP is a management protocol, and it doesn't really fit on this diagram except for that limited purpose that it's used for. Question, sir. Yeah. Yes. Yes, there's a lot of protocols that use SMB for transport, right? And we're not treating the DCOM protocols here in the document, so I can make that the statement I just did, without reference to DCOM. But certainly SMB is a very general, the SMB protocol family is very generally used to transport many protocols. Yeah. And
the other question that came up was, you had a previous diagram that showed various dependencies, obviously DCOM is sort of outside scope there, but the SharePoint also like policy use file protocol as a sort of a integral part of some of the document transfer.
You mean beyond its use but by group policy? Because I mean every node is going to use SMB to download group policy. SharePoint is primarily not using the SMB protocols, is my understanding. Dave, am I wrong about that? Yeah. And WebDAV is not treated in this document, FSSO. So WebDAV is not in scope for FSSO, and I couldn't tell you actually which system document, if any, treats WebDAV. Anybody know?
I don't know system document. There is a WebDAV extension.
Yeah. So, does that answer the question? SharePoint uses its own security access security mechanism for access to files, which is distinct from ACLs. Uses WebDAV, but it doesn't use anything like NTFS ACLs at the SharePoint site. Instead, there's a whole bunch of SharePoint permissions that you set that are somewhat analogous to ACLs, but it's not the same thing. So I think I beat that one to death. Okay, here's the RPC-related protocols, and these are typically the management protocols. And and certainly the newer management protocols are all RPC-related. Okay, and so they are the workstation service protocol, server service protocol, DFSNM, and then we do have one instance of DCOM shown here, because the FSRM protocol is part of FSSO and it's transported by DCOM. And this legend here is showing a particular profile that's used, protocol profile that's used in the RPC stack for the transport of these protocols. So what this is telling you is that this is FSRM over DCOM over RPC over IP, over TCP/IP, basically. And then in this case, these protocols are also transported by RPC, but they use a different profile. And I'm trying to remember what it is. Dave, can you help me with that? The NP name pipes, right? Okay. And so that's how you read that legend. And then, of course, if you read the RPCE document, it'll tell you all about the lower level transport below RPCE. Okay. Now here's the aforementioned system internal diagram, which is actually where we started with this document. We said, gee, we're supposed to be documenting a system. Let's see if we can figure out what the system is that we're supposed to be documenting. And so we came up with this block diagram. That may sound funny to you, but the business of partitioning windows into these systems had never actually been done before in any formal way. And so we had to figure out which part of the system is the file services system and which part of it is the print services system, for example. And there's a little bit of overlap, but I think we've done a fairly good job of partitioning. So if you remember the black box block diagram that you saw before, then I think you should recognize it here. This is showing a lot more of the internal details of the file access services system. And we've taken that block that was labeled file service in the black box and expanded it into these four blocks here: DFS service, SMB service, FSRM service, and NFS service. Okay. And then we've also shown that the DFS service can run both on the file server, which is shown here, and it can run in a domain controller. And even though it runs in the domain controller, which is not part of FSSO, we consider that the DFS service is part of FSSO. And that's what this diagram is trying to represent. So it's inside of the FSSO bounding box, but it's also running on the domain controller, which is a computer which is generally not considered to be part of the file services system. Then we've got the file client and the admin client there, and we've shown the protocols that they use for talking to the other components in the system. And so what you can discern from this simply is that under some conditions, for example, the administrative client will use MSFSRM, the FSRM protocol, for talking to the FSRM service. And some of the external connections are shown in detail. For example, here is that use of wrap that I mentioned before. The NetServer enum2 and NetServer enum3 is taking this arc on the diagram. In other cases, we haven't provided the same level of detail. We've just shown, for example, that there is a dependency on the domain interactions system, that's a very generic dependency that, you know, every file server, every server, in fact, that's in a domain environment has a dependency on the domain system. So this diagram.
How about
search?
Search.
No, it does not. We review search as an external entity. We simply, you know, crawls the file server using file server protocols. So it's a client. So a crawler would be a file client in our architecture.
Or do we not use the name pi?
Does it use name pipe?
I think it uses name pipe.
If it did, it would be doing some kind of an IPC operation, I think. So, no, I'm not familiar with that. Anybody, David, do you know about search using name pipes?
So, you're saying for the query execution, you start to see. Yes,
I'm talking about a WSP.
Yeah, it could be, in general, most of the things that not everything that uses start to see pipes was faster.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure I heard everything, but I think Dave was saying that search protocols are outside of the scope of FSSO, but there are many protocols that do use RPC over named pipes, and in fact, yeah. Okay. Now, corresponding to this table, these are the things that we called informally arcs. You might also call them edges in a graph. And we have, corresponding to this chart, this figure, we have a table that describes each one of those arcs in the figure, and it goes into more detail about what's actually going on there. So, for example, the first row here says that the administrative client, as component one, uses the LDAP protocol to talk to directory services to perform a specific task, right? So this is explaining, you know, why are these protocols used between these components? What are they for? The other little interesting fact that's highlighted here is that this use of LDAP is actually described in the MSDFSNM protocol document, which is a kind of a non-obvious feature. Why, you know, why would you describe LDAP in a different protocol document? So we described it there, in fact, because it's quite relevant to understanding how DFSNM works. And so we wanted to make that sort of relationship here clear. So this table goes on for, you know, two or three pages and fully describes that. All of the edges, all of the so-called, what we called arcs in this diagram. So file client talks to SMB service using one of these protocols. You know, why? What's he doing at a high level? And, you know, if you want more detail about that, you go to the protocol document itself to get the rest of the detail. Okay. Then we go into sequence diagrams. These sequence diagrams are following the UML2 convention, so if you're familiar with that, I hope they'll make sense to you. If not, you need to become familiar with it if you want to make sense of the diagrams. There's quite a bit of program logic in these diagrams. It's so that they don't represent just single execution sequences. They often represent alternative execution sequences. And so that's important to understand. That's why you see things like this, you know, construct here that says alt, that says, you know, if this gating condition is true, then we're going to do this. You know, otherwise, we're going to do this. Okay. And so in this case, what we're doing is we're doing this open file SMB operation. And, this one is correctly called OpenFile DFS in section 6. And it starts by doing the check to see whether it is a DFS referral is in place on the server. And makes a reference to how that's done in the DFSC document. And then it goes and describes again how to do the open and reference to DFSC, and then how to do the makes a reference now to the open file SMB, which is another sequence diagram. So this is a reference to a more detailed sequence diagram that occurs later in the document. So in order to understand these sequence diagrams, you have to understand these conditional constructs and also this idea of referencing another sequence diagram. We structured it this way basically so that the sequence diagrams, each of them would fit on one page, and we thought that would make them more understandable. There are many pages of these sequence diagrams because each one of the detail use cases has a corresponding sequence diagram. So here's an example of a referenced sequence diagram. Remember, here we have the open file SMB, and this is the actual description of it itself, and it has these option blocks that optionally happen, and then it has a further reference to another sequence diagram. So it gets quite interesting. But I hope that this will explain what you actually see when you do the netmon traces or when you look at the netmon traces. Each one of the arcs in the sequence diagram is labeled, like this one, for example, is labeled 1. And there's text after the sequence diagrams that describes what's happening in that step. That has the corresponding labels on them. So as you can see, there's quite a bit of detail, and this goes on for, I don't know, 40 or 50 pages, I think, in the document with all these sequence diagrams and explanations. The just a little plug for Netmon that you heard about in the last presentation. We did all this work basically by starting by doing trace captures, actually, to try to scope out the system. But then, of course, we also have access to the code at Microsoft, and we basically worked both ends towards the middle. We worked with people who understand the code, we worked with people who understand what's happening on the wire, and we tried to put the two ends together into a thorough understanding of what actually happens in this system, and then to document that. But in doing this work, we really worked hard with Netmon 3.3 when it was in beta phase, and we made some improvements to the parsers. For example, we found that SMB2 compounding was not actually working correctly in an earlier version. And Dan Lovinger in the back there fixed the SMB2 parser so that compounding would be done correctly. And we made some other random bug fixes that we found too. So I think Netmon was very helpful to us in doing this work, and I think we were somewhat helpful to Netmon also in making sure that it would work well in portraying the protocols that are used in FSSO.
Randy, you had mentioned earlier about the Netmon captures, and mm-hmm. I did want to mention, since the question had come up, and the question was, where will the captures be stored for the system documents? And they will also be on codeplex.com, and there will be a package. It's currently just a placeholder called sysdoccap. That's sysdoccap. This is currently a placeholder which will be a location for all of the capture files for the system documents. That will include FSSO. It will also include...
I got that right.
Yes, that's correct. SYSDOCCAP.
P?
It's a single P.
Okay, I thought you said PP. Okay.
So that's going to be located on codeplex.com. And again, this will be a package for not only FSSO, but you may remember from the AD plug fest that we had DISO, which is another system document, which is also recorded and available on Channel 9. And also
referenced here.
Yes, ISO. And reference there, ADSO and AuthSO to come.
Yes, Jeremy. Yeah. Right. We're not planning that. I think that the locking behavior is described in the FSBO document. So the thing is that locking is not actually implemented by the protocols themselves, but rather by the file system. And yeah, I think that David is nodding knowingly. Can you add something, David?
Right, because you have like advisory versus and all the other locking semantics, so that would have to go somewhere.
We can.
Well, the real question is whether it is any interaction or whether NFS does its own type of locking.
Yeah.
Right, and I don't actually know.
I believe that our NFS implementation does its own locking within the file service. But Jeremy, I think we can get back to you with a better answer and a contact actually for exploring that, because we don't have represented here today are the people who are working on NFS in our group. But
we can probably get some.
We can get some answers. Yeah. So Daryl, will you make a note of that? Make sure we do it. Okay. So the last thing I wanted to cover is that we do have a number of file system behaviors that are described in the appendix to this document. And primary among them is a discussion about how our NFS implementation maps to our SMB implementation. And as Jeremy points out, we perhaps need to consider describing locking behavior as well. But we have all of this this context here, mostly mode bits and identity and that sort of thing. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Just to make the comment, the read and write access needs to be included as well, because Windows access could have a mandatory lock over a region, and then how does NFS read and write interact with that?
Right.
Sorry, just to go on the record.
Now, some of that may be discussed in the fourth summary use case that has to do with interaction between SMB and NFS. So we'll look at that and make sure that it's discussed appropriately there. Okay, so that is actually the end of the formal presentation. I'm going to just flash the actual document at you to show you that it's real. Maybe you've seen it by now, since I think you do have access to it. Does everybody have access to the document?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So this is the long table of contents. Many pages, you know, definitions of terms, summary, now we're into the use cases, so there are four diagrams describing use cases. This is the one that has to do with the interaction between SMB and NFS. Let me fast forward to get David's email message off the screen. Wanted to fast. Okay, there was the black box diagram that I showed you a moment ago. There's now we're into the all the different shared state models. Which goes on and on. Okay, then we're into the protocol layering that I showed. Discussion about what the protocols do, the internal diagram, Here's that arcs table. It describes the internal diagram. And then we're into the all the sequence diagrams. So I'll stop there. Okay, yes, Jeremy.
So there was one other comment. I've already seen the file system behavior overview document that comes in the same package as this one.
Yes.
And the only issue I can see is that the file system behavior overview document talks in terms of IRPs, which are very, very Windows specific.
Yeah.
And how actions in the file system behave with respect to various Windows IRPs. What seems to me to be missing is a mapping between this document, which talks about how the changes come in on the protocol level, and how that maps into IRPs, or that there's no connection between the two. So the behavior of the file system in the file system behavior document is explained in terms of IRPs, and then the protocols are explained here, but there's no mapping between the two. And that makes it very hard for an implementer to actually understand the relationship between the IRPs that you see in that document and the protocol requests that you see here.
Okay, I'll take that. We'll take that under advisement. There are a number of references in the document to FSBO, which may help with that. But do we have a comment there about it? Yeah.
Yeah, so this is something basically we can improve on. And most of the requests which you see, which are documented in the SMB protocol, are create. And they should directly correlate to, in the ERP document, which is the ERP MJ create, directly. There should be a correlation with respect to the name. Absolutely, there isn't, say any cross-reference, because the two documents talk about different things. So are you interested in like a cross-reference between the two documents? Is that what more you're looking for?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, we'll make a note of it and then we'll take this offline. Okay.
Good feedback. Yep. Any other comments or questions? Daryl? We have time for more discussion if people are interested. Well, thanks everybody for your rapt attention. I hope you'll find the document useful. In fact, I might want to conduct a little bit of a poll if I can get some volunteers. My question would be, how do you think the document will be useful from what you've seen? Or now's your chance to say, I don't think it'll be useful, if that's the way you feel. Anybody want to volunteer? Oh, last time I gave this talk, I had some volunteers. Yes, sir. Yeah.
It's obviously very useful for people coming in without SIFs, without experience developing on these protocols. I think
if you've developed on them for a while, you've got all this kind of mental picture in your head, but it's very helpful for someone coming in without the protocol experience to understand the different layers, especially when the protocols run over other protocols, So I think that's very useful.
Yeah, thanks for that. You did make that comment last time. Thank you. We're actually hoping it's going to help future generations of Microsofties as well, because we do. You know, we have a succession problem internally as well as externally. So, any other questions or comments? All right. Well, thank you, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it.